They let us back in the cage.
They did. Hey, this is Bill.
And this is Steve.
And we're back here on Generations Radio. So, things are popping all over the culture.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the little Super Tuesday happened, and there's some disappointment. There was a little bit of happiness for the Democrats, and
right.
And a lot of sadness for the socialists. AOC even said, you know, it has to be, you know, there's no sugarcoating this. This was a hard day. People were not feeling the burn.
They weren't feeling the burn, but they got burned in the stock market. I mean, that has been a roller coaster.
Oh, it has. And a lot of that, I think, is because all of the hype of the coronavirus. I get it. I'm a nurse. You know, as a registered nurse, I see this. There are hundreds of millions, if not a billion people every year that get the flu. In the United States alone, we usually lose between 60 and 80,000 people to the H1N1 or one of the avian flus every year. Now, granted, this is well below like a 1% mortality rate, and we've got coronavirus that is somewhere around 2.5 to 3% mortality rate. But it's still pretty low, and there's a lot of hype. But it's like who was it? Rahm Emanuel said, "You never want to waste a crisis." And so we've got to have the crisis, and so we need to elevate these crises so high that then we start looking to someone, looking to the government. Oh, government, come and save us! Do something. We've got to do something in order to save us. They're looking for that perfect pill, that panacea that's going to fix everything. And since a lot of people don't believe that God's going to do it, maybe Bernie or Uncle Joe or Donald,
right.
Donald, that maybe they will finally bring about that perfect world where, you know, there's no more tears, no more sadness, no more sickness, no death. I mean, we've got the transhumans. They want to get rid of death by, death by old age anyway, by 2040. I guess it'll only be death by firing squad after that. I don't know. But it's people have always, it seemed like it's always been looking for that perfect world, that perfect utopia. Do you remember the movie Logan's Run?
Yes.
And that was what it was. And utopia, perfect life up until you're, 30 years old. And then you had to go and renew. And they were looking at, the reincarnation, the whole renewal festival.
Was really a way just to get rid of people.
Right. And like the trans, I'm imagining that the transhuman group movement's going to be doing that too. Because if they are successful in merging man and machine, and man no longer dies of old age or any type of disease, then what are we going to do with them?
Because
we're going to
plug them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like you become part of the Borg, and then when you're finished, they just unplug you,
or they plug you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Utopia is an interesting word because it sounds like eutopia, which means good place, but utopia, okay, really means no place.
Really?
So Sir Thomas More, it's one of the books that I have students read in my Utopias and Reality class, which I call a civics class. But it's really a study in readings of man's attempt to create a perfect world and how that's not possible. And yet we've seen this throughout history. But Sir Thomas More was he was poking fun at the society of his day, the English, who thought they had figured it out.
Yeah.
And as a result, we have come to recognize that utopia is not possible. And even Hollywood, when they try to create utopian scenarios, they end up creating dystopia.
Right.
Which is a terrible place.
Yeah.
But so Hollywood's promoting this idea that man is in charge of his destiny, that we can solve our problems through government. They'll back certain candidates, Bernie or Biden or Trump. It doesn't matter who it is. They're looking to man, to government, to create a perfect world. And it's not possible because we recognize, as Christians, we live in a fallen world.
Yeah, and we are fallen people in the fallen world.
Yeah, and sin affected everything. And so we're going to have disease. We're going to have financial troubles. We're going to have all of this. And Jesus said, you know, you're going to have trouble in the world. But yeah. Take heart. Take heart. I have overcome the world. So we don't, as Christians, live in fear. We walk by faith. We don't walk by sight. We walk by faith.
And we among everybody have hope. We have hope for the future because we know that Jesus is coming again. We know that things will all be made right. And as Zig Ziglar used to say, if we have hope in the future, that gives us power for the present. And so we can live that life that God has called us to live. And it's not a perfect life. But it is a good life that we can live, living in harmony with God, living in His life, living in His truth, in His way, until He calls us home or until He comes again.
Yep. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the conversations I've had recently down at Metro State here in Denver.
Oh, that's got to be good.
With some students who are there to create a utopian world. They're putting their hope in the future because they're putting investment into education. So when we return, we'll talk about some of those things.
Folks, we have an urgent request for you. We are jumping on an opportunity to serve Jesus in one of the most practical and most needful opportunities of a lifetime. Christian families and churches are often looking to get out of their holy huddles and put feet to their faith. What about helping with the Rebuild Bahamas for Jesus project spearheaded by Generations? Is there a contractor in your church who can lead a team for us? Would you like to join another team already planning a trip? Just get to Fort Lauderdale, and it's a 30-minute flight to the Grand Bahama. No big deal. We have the materials, the tools, the accommodations ready to facilitate the next team. And one more question. If you cannot help yourself, do you know somebody who can? Check out our website now to join a team or provide your own team. Go to RebuildBahamasForJesus.org. That's RebuildBahamasForJesus.org.
Oh, if only you were in the studio to see what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
It would scar you for life.
Is that what happened to your hair?
Yeah. Hey, welcome back to Generations Radio. I'm Bill.
And I'm Steve.
And we are delighted to be filling in for Kevin while he's, I don't know, what's he doing? Is he self-quarantined?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. So, yeah.
I tell you what, I'm hearing stories. I don't know about you, but fear has gripped this nation. I mean, it's amazing how people have begun to react irrationally to the news about coronavirus hitting the United States.
Yeah.
I've heard twice from two different people that they've, in two different cities, they've gone to either Sam's Club or Costco, and the shelves are empty on toilet paper, rice, and beans.
Yeah.
And a student just told me today that his mother went to the store, and the huge bottles of hand sanitizer had been marked up to $200.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just out in California, and I cater. We went out to do a speech and debate tournament, and I cater my students while I'm out there. So I make a bunch of food for us, and I have to buy stuff when we get there. I don't take everything out. And so we went to Costco, and as soon as we walked into Costco, there's a sign there that is limiting how much toilet paper and how much hand sanitizer and how much other things that people can buy because they're rationing it because I don't know. I mean,
I don't understand. It seems irrational to me. I understand the hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
I don't understand the toilet paper.
Well,
I
guess if you run out of toilet paper, you don't want to be shaking people's hands.
No, that's true. That's true. And I guess I understand the rice and beans, but but it's amazing how people react and how fragile culture is.
Yeah, Y2K.
Yes.
You remember that? I was wanting to sell dehydrated water during Y2K.
That would be good. It's very portable.
Yeah.
Just add
water.
But by the way, okay, we've had the bird flu, we've had the swine flu, we've had SARS, we've had MERS.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ebola.
And we've had coronavirus. Where did those all begin?
China.
And then I started thinking, what about the most devastating pandemic in the history of mankind, which was
Was that the Black Plague?
No, not even close. It was the Spanish influenza in 1917.
Really?
In 18 months, the lowest estimate is 20 million. Up to 40 million people worldwide were killed by the Spanish influenza. In fact, it spread so far that it even got up into the gold mining camps here in Colorado. People died in Cripple Creek from the Spanish influenza.
I thought that was the Spanish Inquisition.
No, okay. It was the influenza.
Well, and nobody would expect the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah. More people died of the Spanish flu than they did of World War One casualties.
Wow.
And it lasted 18 months. They didn't find a cure. They didn't produce a virus. Nothing. I mean, a vaccine. It just disappeared.
Wow.
It just disappeared. But you know, I researched it. You know where it started? Upper Mongolia.
Really? I did not know that.
So this is fascinating to me that all of these are coming from China. And yet, what have we done? We have turned all of the production of our pharmaceuticals, the very necessities that help fight this, where is that done? China. Maybe we should have done the research in China and done the manufacturing here instead of doing the research here and then the manufacturing there, right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
And what gets me is that, you know, we've hit, 1,000, a little over 1,000 people in the United States now have gotten it. I think we're up to 28 or 36 people who have died. So we're at about a 3% mortality rate.
Yeah.
And people are closing stuff down. I mean, in China, what's interesting in China, I don't know if you knew this, but they've closed down all the public schools in China. China is now on mandatory homeschooling. and there are people in China that are contacting Czech right now asking, how do we homeschool our kids?
No kidding.
And yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's... This is actually a great opportunity, and we don't know how long they're going to end up closing things down. There are schools in the United States that are closing down.
Well, Harvard, for example,
and
some of the other Ivy League schools, when they dismissed their students for spring break, they said, and do not come back.
Yeah.
Do not come back and finish the semester because we're locking everything down. Now, this gives Christians the opportunity to go out and say, look, the world is a scary place. You're right. And there is bad stuff that happens to people, but we do not live in fear. We don't operate from a position of fear because we have faith in a loving God. And again, it's this, the fear factor is multiplied during times of crisis like this and crises. And so we as Christians need to give the message that fear does not control us. It is that we do not operate out of fear and defeat. We are people who walk by faith and exercise our duties, and we're to go out and proclaim truth and grace.
Right.
And so with that, I'm speaking to myself. I'm preaching to the choir here because I have to go out periodically and do
you
that.
You have to.
I have to. And it's one of those love-hate relationships, okay?
Yeah.
I hate doing it until I get into it.
Yeah.
I was an adult before somebody trained me how to effectively give away my faith. So it doesn't come naturally for me. But they trained me and they taught me how to do it, and they said, now go do it. So I'll go out on college campuses and with my friend Russ Carter, and he will film me while I interview students. So we went out on Monday. It was a pretty day. Went down to Metro, and I was trying to figure out what questions to ask and how to get conversations going where I was going. It wasn't really going well. It was not a good day, okay? We talked about fear.
Yeah.
What do you fear the most? And we got some odd answers.
Yeah, I bet so.
Yeah. In fact, the first thing that happened Well, before we do that, you were talking earlier. I have a question about this. What did you mean by transhuman?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what was that?
Well,
because I was thinking of something else.
Yeah.
Which reminded
trans
me of
something else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only reason I even came across this is because there is a candidate on the primary Republican ticket, a guy named Zoltan something. And I mean, yeah. And I mean, this is perfect. I don't know if that's his given name or if he gave it to himself, but he puts himself off as a transhuman, and a transhumanism. Actually, he's not a transhuman, but he supports transhumanism, which is merging man with machine. And he's saying that we are creating these, the artificial intelligence, AI, so quickly that if we don't want the machines to eventually take over, we need to merge man with machine. And one of his things is, I believe, was that he wants to get rid of, eliminate death by old age by 2040, so that people will just, so the sickness and getting old and all of that would no longer be an issue for us. It's kind of like a utopia, I guess. But that's what transhumanism is. And that there, even Elon Musk is talking about this a little bit, that he doesn't call himself a transhuman or transhumanism supporter necessarily, but he does believe that we need to merge man with machine, and that that's going to make even a better person.
Right. So therefore, we're once again back at trying to create a utopian world.
Right.
But that will result in dystopia very quickly.
Yeah.
Because who's going to control this?
Who's going to decide
who gets to live forever, by the way?
Yeah. So if it works and we're still procreating, maybe they make it so that nobody can procreate anymore. But if we are continuing to have kids, then what are we going to do with all these people who are living such vast lifetimes? And so
Right. It
won't be old age. It'll be, it's time to renew.
Yep.
It's step into this little box here, and we're going to send you on to the next life.
Soylent Green all over again.
Yeah.
That's a blast from the past.
Oh, my. Yeah.
But it's an attempt to create a utopian world. And that's what you see with the educational institutions.
Yeah.
They put their hope in man, and they train students that we can solve these problems. I was amazed down at Metro that there wasn't the fear factor that you see in the media about the coronavirus or about the financial meltdown. The students seem to be very hopeful, which is part of youth. Okay,
yeah.
Youth tend to be more hopeful, but it did surprise me a bit. I mean, the first thing that happened, and this just frustrated me. First thing that happened is we set up our camera on a tripod, and somebody came over and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, step into our studio," and I started asking questions.
Come
and
find out.
Yeah, this person was trans,
but
not a transhuman.
Human, yeah,
it was transgendered. And for some reason, we got off on the issue of evolution. And this I said, so believe in evolution. So my question was, what is the most convincing piece of evidence, scientific evidence, that convinces you that evolution is true? And it was a frustrating conversation because this person would say, well, you take two monkeys, put them on one side of the mountain, on the other side of the mountain, and they're going to develop different. I'm going, wait, that's a story. That's not evidence for evolution. And I finally said, okay, life from non-living dead chemicals.
Right.
And I was not communicating clearly, or this person was not hearing me, because this person accused me of being illogical. Okay. And then
everybody knows life can't come from dead chemicals.
Yeah, right. But that's the premise of evolution.
Yes, it is.
And he recognized that, and therefore he wouldn't answer the question. He could never give me a piece of evidence that convinced him that evolution was true. Demonstrable, repeatable, testable, laboratory evidence or an experiment that one could do that demonstrated evolution. And yet he clung to this, or he. I said, "Hey, man," and he said, "Don't call me that." I said, "Well, what are you?" He said, "I choose my own pronouns." Now, here's the question. What question? I got home. I always get home, and I think, what question should I have asked?
Yeah.
Okay? And it comes to me.
It always comes late, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yeah. That's me.
Yeah.
So, okay, here's this person who claims to be transgendered, but claims to be a chemistry student, and believes in science and the scientific method. So what question should I have asked this person? I came up with this question. See if this is the right question.
Alrighty.
Okay? So, as a science person, as one who believes in the scientific method, then tell me, how many human sexes are there? That would have produced an interesting conversation.
Yeah, because there's a difference these days between sex
and
gender.
Because gender is a mental construct.
Right. Or at least that's what they say.
Yeah, sex is biological. Okay. Well, then, if that's the case, then I am a 5-year-old, 6'4", Chinese woman.
Yeah.
I choose to be that. Okay. So it would have been a fascinating conversation. What happened was I got frustrated. This person was getting frustrated. So we just said, we got to cut this off. Okay.
Yeah.
But there was another student who had come up and was listening intently. I had a 40-minute conversation off camera with that student. And then, but I was frustrated all afternoon.
Yeah.
But it people would come up and say, what are you doing? And they would eagerly step into the interview. Like the transgender or this other person. And it reminds me that we as Christians often think the world doesn't want to hear. The world doesn't want to converse. They're eager to talk about ideas. We have to find that touch point on the culture that we can begin to start the conversations. It's not going to be necessarily that you're out there street preaching. There's a place for that.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is necessary. If God calls you to that, do it. Okay. Because that's what God wants you to do. But there were guys out there who were engaging people in a different way with the gospel. I saw people opening up Bibles on the campus. Now, what we were doing was just we were talking about issues and questions of the day. Finally, out of frustration, we were there for a couple hours, and out of frustration, He said, we can either go get lunch or maybe do one more interview. I said, okay, let's go back and try it again. We go back, and I'm standing there, and there's a girl who sits down on the bench, and Rusty and I look at her, and Rusty says, talk to her. I said, okay. She was eager to be interviewed, and my first question was, Trump or Bernie? and she started off with Bernie, okay?
Yeah.
And I said, why? She said, well, I don't like Trump's demeanor. I said, well, put his personality aside. I said, how about policies? And she switched from Bernie to Trump. But she recognized that Bernie was offering a utopian worldview
right.
that was not going to meet the expectations of reality or the claims of reality. But it quickly went from that to the gospel. And I'm standing there, and I give this girl the gospel, and she trusts Christ.
Wow.
And it's a reminder, it's not by my might or my power or my wit. I know you're thinking I'm half
yeah.
right on that. Yeah. But it's by His Spirit.
Yeah.
It's just that we need to go out and proclaim truth and grace. Truth and grace, because without that, this is a dystopian world. Christians recognize there's not going to be a perfect world until Christ's return. But until that time, we are stuck in dystopia. We have to proclaim the coming of His kingdom, which will create a perfect world. It's not yeah. up to us. It's up to Him. He will right every wrong. He will dry every tear. He will correct what the evils have created in this world.
Yeah, and one of the things I like to tell my students and anybody else who might listen is that for a Christian, this is the worst it will ever be for us.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about that? I mean, this is the worst it will ever be, and life is not that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, there are bad things that happen, and you know, there's diseases, there's death, there's all kinds of things out there. But really, you know, life is not that bad. God has given us as Christians a love for this life because he is life himself and he's put his life in us. But for those who are unregenerate, this is the best it'll ever be.
A buddy of mine told me he heard a pastor who said, for the non-Christian, this life is as close to heaven as you're ever going to get.
Right.
And for the Christian, this is close to hell as you're ever going to get.
Yeah.
You know? And you think about that. That's true. That's true. We have hope in a bright future, and we need to proclaim that. So I tell those stories about going out on Metro because, number one, if you just knew how much I dislike doing it until I get into it.
Yeah.
And then I love the conversations. Go out and do that. Take your family out and just spend 40 minutes asking a question of the day. And be sure and take your camera and videotape it and then bring it back to your Sunday school class, your Bible study, your homeschool support group. Show the footage and say, okay, how should I have asked a better question? What should I have said here? How should I have responded here? Did I blow it here? What does Scripture say about what this person's saying? And you can use it to train your family, your extended family, your friends, Sunday school class, Bible study, how to engage the culture with truth and grace and not be stumped. It's just a matter. It's, as a buddy of mine says, it's a conversation, not a confrontation.
Right. And if we just show them how much hope we have, because again, if we have hope in the future, which we above everybody else should be the most hopeful that there is, because we know who's won, he already won, and he's coming back again to take us home, we should have that hope just oozing out of us. You should have people coming up and saying, tell me, what is the reason for this hope that's in you?
Right.
And then we need to be ready to give that answer with gentleness and with respect.
That's one of the things that makes Worldview Academy distinct, is I believe, in our leadership training programs all summer long. It's a week-long camp, but every Wednesday, no matter where we are, students go out and engage people in conversation, usually on a college campus. And they come back, and they've seen the power of the gospel transform lives. They realize that their Sunday school answers don't suffice, so they go, I need some more of this. I need to be trained. Or they see somebody to whom they've given a clear gospel turn and walk away in rejection, and it breaks their heart.
Yeah.
It tenderizes people's hearts. Our job is to steel their minds, as in harden their minds, and to soften their hearts.
Yeah.
And that's what we do at Worldview Academy. If you're interested, you can check us out at worldview.org. We'd love to have you join us at a leadership camp where we train students in worldviews, evangelism, apologetics, and servant leadership skills. It is an intense program. They're in class about 29 hours out of the week. But it is one of the best weeks of the students' lives. In fact, we have probably, last year we had over an 85% sign up from students, existing students, for this coming year. But there's still space available. We have several camps throughout the country. Wherever you are, you can find one. Worldview.org. Hopefully you'll take advantage of that.
And there's tons of resources through CHECK and through Generations Radio. Check that out. And always be ready. Always be ready to give an answer for the hope that lies within you with gentleness and with respect. And if you show that hope, people are going to ask you about it.
Right.
Be that light shining on a hill. It's been great to be with you again, Bill.
You as well.
And I guess Kevin's back next time, and so we're
sad.
It's not going to be us together again for who knows how long, but hopefully we didn't ruin it for all of forever. But it's great having you here.
You as well. And, well, I love the music.
Me too. Until next time, we'll see you on Generations Radio. No pretense.